Our study tonight is Nahum chapter 2. It's about a battle. It's about the end of a long war between the Babylonian Empire and the Assyrian Empire. The battle that we're going to be looking at is the defeat of the Assyrian Empire. We saw it already announced in Nahum chapter 1, verse 8, when it read, "But with an overflowing flood, he will make a complete end of its sight." And we saw that the word sight is actually Nineveh. So he will make a complete end of its sight, and the word sight refers to the city of Nineveh. That's chapter 1, verse 1. Because in chapter 1, verse 1, it said the oracle of Nineveh. And Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire. And then at the end of verse 8, it says, "And will pursue his enemies into darkness." So that was actually the summary of the rest of the book as to what's going to happen. It makes the point that there's an overflowing flood, going to destroy Nineveh, destroy the capital, destroy the empire, and that's the end. Now, we believe that the battle that's going to be described for us here in chapter 2, and it actually bleeds into chapter 3, but in chapter 3, we're also going to find out the justification or the reason for this destruction of the Assyrian Empire. And we believe that this battle occurred in 612 BC. So that's 612 BC. And if you're familiar with something called the Babylonian Chronicle, there's actually a lot of information from that chronicle. The chronicle, we believe, was created roughly 605 to 594 BC. And there is descriptions in there about the battle. There's descriptions about other things as well. But tonight, what's important for us is that it actually gives us some insight from a secular perspective what actually happened in the battle. So we get the secular perspective, we get the biblical perspective, we can combine them together and get a fuller understanding of what actually occurred. And this prophecy is right on track. This is great. It's right on track. And the final battle, as I've already said, occurred in 612 BC. And it turns out that there is an alliance between the Babylonian Empire, the Median Empire, the Persian Empire, the Crimean Empire, and the Scythian Empire. And they all came against the Assyrian Empire. Now, did you keep track of all that? But what happened is a bunch of nations came together to defeat what was already an existing empire, the Assyrian Empire, and so they collected their forces and then went against the Goliath, so to speak. That's really what they did. And they defeated the Goliath. And the primary two armies were the Babylonian Empire, already mentioned the Median Empire, but there's a gang called Cyaxares, and what he did is he joined the battle against Nineveh. And what we are going to be looking at tonight is the final heart of the siege. The alliance of all these different nations against the Assyrian Empire actually began a 12-year war. And in the last 3 months, there was a siege against the city of Nineveh. And that siege ended on August 612 BC, and that's what our chapter is about. Is the very end of this last three-month siege. And what happened during the siege is that they broke down the defenses of the city and plundered the city, and you're going to see all that follows. They plunder the city, people are killed, people run. It's incredible. Diodorus, who was a Greek historian, writes that the Tigris River had flooded. He writes that the Babylonian Empire and its alliances, they had created a dam. It was a double-walled dam. And so they apparently waited for a prime opportunity when torrential rains were coming down. They broke the dam. The water rushed down the Tigris River, broke down the floodgates of Nineveh, and destroyed the foundation of the palace. And then in went the soldiers and defeated the city of Nineveh. Now that's a short version of tonight's study. We are told that Nineveh had 1,500 towers, 200 feet high. I mean, that's a lot of towers, and that's a fairly high, 200 feet high. So our study is about the end of this three-month siege. And so Nahum chapter 2, let's start with verse 1. We're going to go through 13 verses, and when you get done, I trust that what you see is that you say, hey, this prophecy was right on track. This prophecy was great. Verse 1, the one who scatters has come up against you. Man the fortress, watch the road, strengthen your back, summon all your strength. So the opening part of this verse is that the one who scatters has come up against you. And you might wonder, like, who is the one who scatters? Who's the one who comes up against you? And what it's describing is the Babylonian Empire is the one who scatters, and it's coming against the Assyrian Empire. You might say, well, like, how do you know that Babylon is the one that scatters? Check out Jeremiah chapter 51. Turn there if you would. Jeremiah 51, and if you look at verse 20 to 23, you'll find that it talks about scattering. And this is addressed to Babylon. Verse 20 says, he says, you are my war club, my weapon of war, and with you I shatter nations, and with you I destroy kingdoms, and with you I shatter the horse and his rider, and with you I shatter the chariot and its rider, and with you I shatter man and woman, and with you I shatter old man and youth, and with you I shatter young man and virgin, and with you I shatter the shepherd and his flock, and with you I shatter the farmer and his team, and with you I shatter governors and prefects, but I will repay Babylon with all the inhabitants of Chaldea. So here's shatter and shatter and shatter and shatter, and it's talking about the Babylonian Empire. So verse 1 is the one who shatters is the Babylonian Empire is coming against the Assyrian Empire. And then in the middle of this first verse in chapter 2 of Nahum, we're told, man the fortress, watch the road, strengthen your back, and summon all your strength. In other words, the idea is that the Babylonian Empire is coming against you. You better get ready. It's coming against you. You had better get ready. It is coming. And that is the idea here in verse 1. Now, I want you to notice something interesting also in this verse. It says, the one who scatters has come. The phrase has come is present tense. And even though it's talking about something in the future, it's a prophecy of the future, is that it's described as happening at the point of the prophecy. And the reason it's done that way is that it's so certain, it's as though it's already happening right now. That happens in the Greek language. It happens in the Old Testament, in Hebrew. And that's what's happening here. He says, the one who shatters has come. We could almost say is coming after you. That is, it's so certain it's going to happen. It's spoken of as though it's already in process. That's the idea. So verse 1 introduces the armies, introduces the Babylonian Empire coming against the Assyrian Empire. And when you get to verse 2, now verse 2 is an encouragement for Israel. It says, for the Lord will restore the splendor of Jacob. That would be the northern part of the what we normally think of as Israel. This would be the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, and or in this case, Jacob. Like the splendor of Israel, even though devastators have devastated them and destroyed their vine branches. So you get this very interesting verse. In the middle of this battle, this struggle that's going on, and all of a sudden here's this interesting verse. Hey, Israel, you're the one that was defeated by the Assyrian Empire. God says, you have a great future. I'm going to restore the splendor of Jacob. And that sounds pretty cool, restore the splendor of Jacob. In the middle of this description of the battle between the Babylonian Empire and the Assyrian Empire, where the Assyrian Empire is going to lose, going to be defeated, God says, hey, Israel, I'm going to restore your splendor. And that reminds me of the fact that God cares about us. You know, you go through a trial, you go through a difficulty, the Lord doesn't just abandon you. He says, I'm with you. I'm right there with you. You're not alone. Just hang on. So this is an upbeat statement. Watch it. It's the only upbeat statement in the chapter. Only upbeat statement in the chapter. The rest of it's all really bad. Verse 3. The shields of his mighty men are colored red. The warriors are dressed in scarlet. The chariots are enveloped in flashing steel. And when he is prepared to march, and the cypress spears are banished. So what's being described here in verse 3 now is the military that's coming against the Assyrian Empire. Xenophon, in his document, Cyropedia, in 641, he states that the Median army was dressed in scarlet. Watch this. We're talking about the primary armies that came against the Assyrian Empire were the Babylonian Empire and the Median Empire. Now, earlier I had mentioned some others as well, but those are the primary ones who come against the Assyrian Empire. Are you with me? And so what Xenophon tells us is that the Median army was dressed in scarlet. Go to Ezekiel chapter 23, verse 14. Ezekiel 23, and you'll find out that there's another army that's also dressed in red. And the other army is the Chaldeans or the Babylonian Empire. Verse 14 says, "And so she increased her harlotries, and she saw men portrayed on the wall, images of the Chaldeans portrayed with vermilion." Now, what's vermilion? Vermilion is a bright red. Bright red. So the Median army is dressed in scarlet. The Babylonian Empire is dressed in bright red. So when Nahum chapter 2, verse 3 says that the shields of his mighty men are colored red and the warriors are dressed in scarlet, guess what? Dead on. Historical records support that. Scripture also supports that. That is specifically, in this case, Ezekiel 23, verse 14. And so the Median army and the Babylonian army, they came against the Assyrian army. They came in red. And guess what about the shields? The shields, we discover, if you check out secular sources, were wood covered with red-dyed leather. Now, there is another possibility that they were copper. And so what happens to copper if it gets wet? It changes color, okay? And depending upon the mineral deposits in it, it could actually end up having an orange color to it as well. So what's being described here is mighty men colored red, shields are red, and one commentator made the statement, speculated that one of the reasons that the Median army and the Babylonian army probably wanted to have their soldiers in red and their shields in red is that when you're coming against the people you're attacking, you look like you're bloody. To look at an army that's coming against you and they're all in red reminds you of blood. It's scary. And that very well could be that the reason that the Babylonian Empire and the Median Empire had their military in red is that it would scare those who they are coming against. And so it's just a reminder of blood is basically the point. Verse 3 goes on. It says the chariots are enveloped in flashing steel. The idea is that the chariots contained steel. And then we're told that the cypress spears are brandished. That is that they're waving them is the idea. Now, if you were to look at some of the reliefs, archaeological reliefs, you'd find that the depictions of the soldiers, they had spears, they had arrows. The fact that they had arrows is going to become an issue in just a second. Verse 4. Verse 4 says, "The chariots race madly in the streets, and they rush wildly in the squares, and their appearance is like torches, and they dash to and fro like lightning flashes." So, question is, what kind of chariots are these? Well, the chariots, we believe, are Scythide chariots. Here's a Scythide chariot. A Scythide chariot is a chariot where the wheels have actually a knife that comes out. And so if you're racing down the street and the people are in the way, what happens to them as that knife hits them? Cuts them. Breaks their legs maybe as you're really racing. And so that's the picture. Watch this. Verse 3 and 4 are talking about the invading army. The army's coming in. Soldiers are coming in. They're in red. They have spears. They have shields. I mean, that's the picture of verse 3. Verse 4 is chariots, and they're rushing wildly down the streets, we're told, and their appearance is like torches. They're just moving so fast, it just flashing, glistening in the sun as they're flying. That's the picture here in verse 4. So incredible invading army. So what happened in verse 1? In verse 1, we're told, oh, watch out, they're coming. And here they are. Verse 3 and verse 4, here's the army. You got the guys on foot, and you have the men in chariots, and they're running down the street. Verse 5. Verse 5 says, and he remembers his nobles, talking about the leader of the Assyrian Empire. They stumble in their march. They hurry to her wall, talking about the wall of Nineveh, and the mantlet is set up. Now, this verse is very interesting because what we know from history, and that appears to be what's being described here in verse 5, is that initially, during this three-month siege that happened, the Median commander initially set his troops up on the northern part of the city of Nineveh. Cyaxares set his troops up on the northern part of the city of Nineveh. The Assyrian Empire, we're told from historical records, clashed with him initially, and they won. They won. And the Assyrian Empire then celebrated, and they ended up drunk, and Cyaxares took advantage of this. He came down, and he defeated the Assyrian army. The Assyrian army fled, and that appears to be what's being described here in verse 5. And he remembers his nobles, and they stumble in their march. The verse says that they hurry to their wall. They hurry to her wall. They actually run then to the wall of Nineveh. Apparently, the Assyrian army is outside of the walls of Nineveh because they actually went out to engage the Median army. And so when they get defeated, they run to the city of Nineveh. And we're told this mantlet is set up. And the question is, what is this mantlet? And there aren't any really solid historical records that describe the nature of the mantlet. But what a mantlet is something that protects the troops from arrows or spears. So what they did is that they set something up to protect themselves as they are retreating to the city, to defend the city. I mean, this is really an incredible mess that's occurring. And then there probably is a time gap between verse 5 and 6. And it says, and the gates of the rivers are opened, and the palace is dissolved. Now, you might wonder, what is that talking about? Well, first of all, what we do know, and we've already made the comment, is that the Babylonian army built a water reservoir. They built two massive walls away from Nineveh, and the idea was that they siphon off the Tigris River water into this dam that had two massive walls. Apparently, what happened, from what we can gather from secular records, is that the rains came and flooded the Tigris River. So they opened the dam. Once they opened the dam with all this massive water that's coming from the rain, they destroyed the floodgates of Nineveh, swept into the city, destroyed a part of the palace foundation, and that's what's being described here in verse 6. It says, the gates of the rivers are opened and the palace is dissolved. And that's what happened. Archaeological records tell us that the palace had a mural on four walls, 8 feet tall and 80 feet that wrapped around. So the mural started on one side and just wrapped all the way around. Incredible, incredible palace. And the walls were covered with limestone. And Sennacherib did a great job. Sennacherib had a fabulous palace, but it got destroyed. Got destroyed. Verse 7. It is fixed. She is stripped. She is carried away. And her handmaids are moaning like the sound of doves beating on their breasts. What's it describing? Defeat. It's describing defeat. That's what is being described. Verse 8 goes on, says, though Nineveh was like a pool of water throughout her days, now they are fleeing. Stop, stop. But no one turns back. What's being described is the destruction of Nineveh now. It's all over. It's fixed. She's stripped. She's carried away. Her handmaids are moaning like the sound of doves beating on their breasts. Have you ever heard a dove? Ever heard a bunch of doves together? What do they sound like? Moaning kind of sound. That's what's being described. And that's what's happening in the city. The city's moaning. They've been defeated. What would it be like if you woke up tomorrow morning and you saw a foreign invading army coming down your street? What would that be like? Never happened here in the United States of America. Might happen someday. That's what's being described here, is this invading army coming down your streets, and it's all over. And verse 8 says, though Nineveh was like a pool of water throughout her days. Now you might wonder, what is being described here? What does it mean, a pool of water? Well, what's being described in verse 7 and verse 8 is the people are fleeing. Watch this. People used to go to the city. People gravitated to the city of Nineveh. Nineveh was a fabulous place. It's been speculated that probably 100,000 people in the city of Nineveh back in those days. Back in those days, that would be a lot of people. You have to think about water and sanitation and end up with a multi-million population for a city back in those days. That would have been a big challenge. And how do you get 100,000 people in the city of Nineveh? People want to go there. People want to go there. So people would go to the city of Nineveh, and it says, though Nineveh was like a pool of water throughout her days, that is, people were coming, what's happening now? They're fleeing. They're leaving. Stop, stop, but no one stops. Why does no one stop? Why does no one turn back? Because the invasion is successful. The Median army has defeated the city of Nineveh, has defeated the military of the Assyrian Empire, and Nineveh has been defeated. Verse 9, plunder the silver, plunder the gold, for there is no limit to the treasure, wealth from every kind of desirable object. What's being described now? What's being described is plunder. Ashurbanipal writes in his annals on 27 different times about the silver and the gold that the Babylonian Empire and the Median Empire found when they invaded the city of Nineveh. Can you imagine? 27 times he writes in his annals about the silver and gold that they found. Messages, it was a huge amount of wealth in the city of Nineveh. Gold everywhere, silver everywhere. Where did they get it? They got it from the nations that they defeated. That's where they got it. Probably had slave labor as well, collecting the silver and the gold that they wanted. But silver and gold everywhere. And so it says, plunder the silver, plunder the gold, for there is no limit to the treasure. Look at that. No limit to the treasure. The treasure was massive. Just massive treasure. Wealth from every kind of desirable object. Verse 10, she is emptied. Yes, she is desolate and waste. Hearts are melting. Knees are knocking. Also, anguish is in the whole body, and all their faces are grown pale. What's talking about is pain of defeat. Pain and defeat. Hearts are melting. Knees are knocking. I think that's a good description, wouldn't you think? Invading army has come in. You see these chariots flying down the street with these knives sticking out the side. I'm like, wow. Men with spears and arrows, colored in red, coming down your street. I mean, knees are knocking. Hearts are melting. Faces are grown pale. I mean, people are in panic. That's what's being described. Verse 11. Verse 11 and 12 talk about lions. What's important to note is that, I'll read the verses in just a second, but first of all, the symbol of Assyria was lions. Lions were all over the place. The symbol of the Assyrian Empire was a lion. In fact, we're told that the Assyrian leader was proud of lion hunts. The Assyrian leaders were proud of lion hunts. They talked about it a lot. Sennacherib, that's King Sennacherib, boasted, like a lion, I raged. Like a lion, I raged. That was Sennacherib's boast. So here's verse 11 and 12. It says, where is the den of the lions and the feeding place of the young lions? Where the lion, lioness, and lion's cub prowled with nothing to disturb them? The lion tore enough of his cubs, killed enough of his lioness, and filled his lairs with prey and his dens with torn flesh. Message is kind of simple. Like, where are the lions? They're not around anymore. The lion tore enough of his cubs, that's talking about the past, killed enough of his lionesses and filled his lairs with prey and his dens with torn flesh. But like, where are they today? Message is, they're not. So there's a description of the battle. The final battle, final defeat, plunder, people are leaving. It's painful. A painful set of events. We're going to see more in chapter 3, but chapter 2 closes out this way. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts. I will burn up her chariots in smoke, and a sword will devour your young lions, and I will cut off your prey from the land, and no longer will the voice of your messengers be heard. God is announcing this against the Assyrian Empire. Message is, I'm against you. And what's going to happen is I'm going to burn up the chariots that you do have, and a sword will devour your young lions. So the Assyrian Empire, you were fond of lions. Like, where are they? And I will cut off your prey from the land, and no longer will the voice of your messengers be heard. God is pronouncing judgment against the city of Nineveh, the Assyrian Empire. And God says that he's against them. I tell you, I would not want to have God as my enemy. Turn to Romans 8:31. I'm going to close with this tonight. Romans 8:31 says, what then shall we say to these? If God is for us, who is against us? If you're a Christian tonight, guess who's in your corner? Guess who's for you? God's for you. If God is for us, who can be against us? And the answer is nobody. People can be against you, but they won't succeed. If God is for us, who is against us? And the answer is nobody. That's the point. What's interesting about this passage of Scripture here in Romans chapter 8, it's actually dealing with the whole topic of salvation. If you look at the verse just before that, it says, those whom he predestined, he called. And those whom he called, he justified. And those whom he justified, he glorified. All of the verbs are what we call aorist tense verbs. And that means that they have already happened. So verse 30, we can read it this way. He called. He justified. When it says justified, you know what that means? You're holy. You've been declared to be as holy as God. Isn't that incredible to think that you're as holy as God is? And that's because you put your faith in Jesus Christ. And what he does is that he covers you. He protects you. He tells the Father, oh no, there's no sin in that person. Isn't that good? And then the last one is that you're glorified. And what does that mean? That means you're already in heaven. You're already glorified. And you say, no, I'm not. Yeah, but as far as God's concerned, it's already happened. That's how certain it is. It's already happened. And then verse 31 says, and what then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? So it's for Christians, not for non-Christians, but for Christians. If you're a Christian, God is for you, and nobody can be against you. Isn't that good? Good news. Let's pray.